Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you could join us this morning. I thought today it would be interesting to have a conversation with Shelley and Monica about immunizations. I was up late last night, and I was looking through some of my Facebook conversations and things like that, and I found out that there's still so much controversy over shots, vaccinations. When I was growing up, shots were important, most definitely, and we would get set up to have all of our shots as little kids with our family physician, and you know, there was no questions asked. You just did it. And the whole idea of a vaccination was to give your body an opportunity to build an immunity to a specific disease or issue. So I personally never got a polio vaccination, because every time my mom would take me to get a polio shot, I had chronic throat and earache and kind of like head and neck stuff going on as a child. I'd get strep throat at the drop of a hat. I had my tonsils out before I was two, and according to one pediatrician, that's what really did me in. Having my tonsils out at such an early age, I had no place in my throat to catch all the bacteria, because that's really all tonsils are supposed to be good for, as my knowledge goes. And they're supposed to catch some of the problems that you get in your head and neck area when you're a kid. So I had swollen glands, I had a mastoid infection, I had sinusitis, I had all that stuff at a very, very early age. So every time Mom would take me for a polio shot, they'd say, no, she'll get too sick. So even then, even when I realized what they were saying to my mother when I got older and we talked about it, I said, doesn't that seem kind of dangerous? That, you know, back in those days, you didn't do blood tests at the drop of a hat. The doctor wasn't taking a vial of your blood every time you went for your well baby visit, nor with my kids. 20 years later, when I became a mom and I would take my kids someplace for a doctor's visit, it would be a whole other story. Again, you know, there was no, you didn't tap into a kid's blood all the time like we do today. My most recent experience in the hospital, of course, was the great-grandson who I shared with all of you. First of all, got sick with a respiratory problem and has been diagnosed, I might add, with some kind of asthmatic issues. But the first thing he got was a virus, a respiratory virus. And while he was in the hospital with the respiratory virus, he picked up MRSA. They let him come home with albuterol and some other things that are supposed to suppress or repair the asthma, which really all it does is keep the airways open so that they can breathe. There is no cure for asthma. Once you have it, apparently you have it. So then he goes back to the hospital because he's so sick and running a high temperature, and he ends up with MRSA-infected spinal meningitis. We literally, for probably 10 days, weren't sure whether he was going to make it. Every doctor that walked into the room expressed to his grandmother, his great-grandmother, myself, and his mommy, this is a very, very sick baby. And you could tell. Sometimes he would be almost delirious with fever and just be rocking his head back and forth and crying. It was awful. So now, the whole time we're in there, I'm watching, and this baby, they had to open a line to pull blood from all the time. He was on a continuous IV that they had in his arm, and then when that closed up and had a clot in it and could have been one of the reasons why at the other hospital there were issues with the MRSA, they had to put him under, sedate him, and put an open IV, a heparin lock or a pick lock, whatever you want to call it. There's all kinds of terminology for it, in his little fat thigh. He still has scars on his leg from all the stitches that held that in place. And constant IV of antibiotics. So, again, now, and this baby was born with issues. He was born with holes in his heart. His heart is like turned a funny way, so they couldn't see one of the ventricles, and we know now that it's there. And he was born with bilateral club feet. So I am mystified over all the things that they mess with on the internal part of this child. So when I started reading about all the comments about IVs, or I'm sorry, not IVs, but about vaccinations and everything, I thought to myself, how does a doctor today make a call on a child that has not had any issues? Now, like baby Alan, it'll be on his charts, his blood type, everything, all the counts and everything. But as a rule, a doctor doesn't, unless they're sick, doesn't take a blood test to find out what's going on with you, how your immune system is, or anything. So I question the intelligence, to be honest, of giving a disease, a small amount, albeit, to a small child and saying, okay, now his body is going to build all the antibodies and he's going to fight this disease, so he'll be immune to this disease. So you see where the issues are. I'm going to open up the lines. Monica hasn't joined us yet, but Shelley is here. And poor Shelley, I tried to get a hold of her last night and could not, so she doesn't, this is a surprise to her what we're talking about this morning. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey. Yeah, I'm good with surprises.
Yeah, I know. Thank God, right? Being my friend, you have to be.
So, yeah, and it's a good subject, too. It's very, very controversial, unfortunately, but a good subject to talk about. And this, just like everything else we discuss on here, people have to go with what makes sense to them. Personally, I don't believe in vaccinations. I have not had vaccinations in over, well, I guess about 30 years. I had stopped getting vaccinations when I was in my 30s, because I noticed that every time I got the flu shot, I got the flu. I mean, it was just, it devastated me. I would just have a full-blown flu. So the 1 year, my clinical ecologist, he's sort of like a naturopath, but back then they were called clinical ecologists. He explained to me that, you know, a lot of doctors, especially naturopaths, don't believe in, you know, immunization. He told me why. So I stopped getting the flu shot. And
wow.
I have not had a flu shot in, like I said, decades. I still get the flu every now and then, but with me it lasts for a couple of days, where most people I know it lasts for weeks. And they're just miserable, and they're taking medication, and they got the flu shot. And one of the fallacies of a flu shot is that there are so many strains of a flu, and you're really only getting one of them. So it's only protecting you from what's in the shot. It's not protecting you from all the mutated versions that end up being out there as soon as it goes from person to person to person. So that's one of the fallacies, is that you're really not being protected anyway. You're only being protected from the one that's in the shot you're getting. And the other part of it is that once you've gotten an immunization shot, your physiology is now responding to that threat, all right? And it's almost like your immune system now is hypervigilant against that threat because it senses it, which means now you are vulnerable to other things. That's why a lot of people will get sick after a flu shot. Even if they don't get the flu, they get something else, because it's sort of like distracting your immune system. That's kind of like a layperson's way of describing it. And it just opens the door for other things. Immunization is not the protection that people are taught it is. And I'm a classic example of that. I haven't had the flu shot in decades, and I still get the flu. And the whole thing is that having a strong immune system doesn't mean you never get sick. What it means is that you recover quickly. I recover quickly. I get back on my feet. You know, I'll be really sick for a couple of days. I allow the fever to come up. And I never used to get fevers when I was younger. So the fact that I even get fevers is a good thing, because it shows that I have a properly functioning immune system. You should get fevers, and you shouldn't be overly concerned with reducing a fever unless it's getting dangerously high. And even 103 salt isn't dangerously high, okay? But that's what kills bacteria and viruses. They don't like that heat. It creates an environment they can't survive in. So if you can tolerate a little bit of discomfort, there's homeopathic pills that you can put under your tongue. I forgot the name of it, but I've actually taken it specifically for colds and flus and fever. And what it does is it makes you more comfortable, but it doesn't artificially drive the fever down, so your immune system is still killing what's in you. But what these tablets do is they help you to tolerate the symptoms a little bit, the discomfort and things like that. And I use them, but I don't take over-the-counter flu medication anymore. You know, I don't take that kind of stuff when I get really, really sick. I go to all the naturopathic, and within a couple of days, I'm good to go. And I noticed that people that take the antibiotics and antiviral drugs and stuff like that, they're usually incapacitated for much longer. And even when they are okay, they're very weakened. And this is what I used to go through when I was in my 20s and 30s and even into my 40s before I stopped using pharmaceuticals. This is the route I used to go. I used to be on heavy-duty antibiotics all the time, you know, taking different types of medication. And when I would recover, I would be in a very, very weakened state. See, I'm not like that now. When I recover, when I do get sick, I'm back being energetic almost immediately as soon as the symptoms subside.
Mm-hmm. Well, flu shots are certainly up for grabs. I agree. I've never had a flu shot either. And I do usually I have what I call a low ebb time in my life. Of course, being 65, hopefully, as we age gracefully, hopefully we know ourselves, you know, a little bit, and we realize that there's a certain time, often of the year, that we are not, constitution-wise, as strong as we are at other times of the year. And I have always had a low ebb in March and April, always. And when I realized it, I thought back and I thought, Jesus, this is true every year pretty much of my entire life. And I always chalked it up to getting over the holidays, because the holidays are an incredibly busy time for me. And in the last 32 years, we've lived here in Florida, and February and March can be really funky weather times in Florida. You can still be 80 degrees, or you can be 40 degrees. And for some of us, that throws in the temperature change, the change in the winds. Like yesterday, if you had an allergy, if you have an allergy to pollen or dust mites or any of those kind of things, you were in awful shape yesterday, because yesterday was one of those windy, windy days. Furniture, we had to tie up the chimes out on the patio. We had to, I mean, my heaviest chairs were being knocked over. All of the flowers on my desert roses were blown right off. And the wind was torrential. And if you have allergies to those things, yesterday was a bad day for you. You sneezed all day. Your eyes got itchy. So all of these kind of things go with knowing your own body. So at any rate, I have never had the flu shot. And when Now Big Spike is 70 and he's struggling with cancer. And he's had a rough last 3 years, the heart failure, the aortic aneurysm, the carotid surgery, and now the cancer. So his stamina, which has always been amazingly strong, and his immune system are impaired. I would never, and this is a personal opinion, please do not take it to the bank, because if you still believe you should have a flu shot, then I don't think I should stop you. But I would never take him for a flu shot. It could kill him. It could mm-hmm. kill him. Mm-hmm. Because his immune system right now is so impaired from trying to fight what's been going on the last 3 years in a body that has always been okay. He'd right. never, except for one bout with pneumonia, which was in his, I think, 65th year. And even that, the doctors couldn't believe he was all right in a day. I mean, mm-hmm. literally, in a day, he was better. So he's always had this great immune system and an amazing constitution and an awesome stamina. He's like a bull moose. But if I were to give him or go and get him a flu shot now, it could do him in. So you have to understand that about your bodies before you do flu shots. But now let's get back a little bit to immunizations for small children, because that seems to be a big topic. As a side note, every time we've gone to the doctors for the last 3 years, about the fifth question that they ask when I'm filling out the paperwork for Big Spike is, did you get him his flu shot? And all I say, very simply, short and sweet, is I don't believe in flu shots. And they don't question me anymore. There was a time when they did question people if they said they didn't get a flu shot. You got a reprimand, you got a what are you thinking kind of a deal. No longer do you get that. So what does that tell you?
All right.
I mean, I know. It kind of
well,
tells
I
you
mean, the
that
doctor's
they get
office,
it.
Yeah, the, exactly, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And the doctor's office, well, the pediatrician that my niece goes to for her kids actually put up a sign in the front lobby and said, you know, the titers that the children are supposed to get, basically just stating all the things that people are concerned about and saying, they don't the amount of the ingredients in them, because people say it's like there's formaldehyde in these injections. There's all kinds of preservatives that are dangerous to our health. And it says the levels of these ingredients isn't dangerous. It didn't say it's not there. It said it's not dangerous. You know, immunizations do not cause autism. Immunizations do not cause ADHD. There's no clinical research proving that, which is a lie, by the way. I'll mention a couple of the books that are out, but there's a lot of evidence linking immunizations to a lot of the prevalence of autism and ADHD. There's a link to brain dysfunction because a lot of autism and ADHD is onset after, I think it's the second or third titers. There seems to be a link where you have children that are fine as very, very young children, you know, infants, and then as soon as they get that third titer, there's a distinct difference in their behavior, and now all of a sudden they're being diagnosed with autism. So there's been some books written about that. One woman actually started an organization called TAP, the Autism Autoimmunity Project, where she goes around. She lost her daughter when she was 8 years old because her autism was actually life-threatening autism, and she ended up not surviving it. And this woman went on she now has a whole foundation. She's done a lot of research on immunizations, and she made it, you know, she's the one who found a lot of resources where other doctors don't believe in the immunizations. They think it's very, very dangerous. There's another doctor called Dr. Sears. You can actually Google this, Dr. Sears. And there's a lot of Dr. Sears-oriented pediatrician offices now. And what that means is that Dr. Sears basically goes with the comfort of the parent. If the parent doesn't believe in immunizations, the parents aren't forced to get them. If they believe in immunizations but they don't like how aggressive the standard protocol is, they'll work with them and only give them a reduced schedule of immunizations, or if the parents are comfortable with the very aggressive format that's put out right now by the pharmaceutical companies. And remember, this is regulated by the pharmaceutical companies.
Spit that word out, Shell. I think we lost her for a second. She's trying to say pharmaceutical companies. And this is true. There is so much controversy, and there's a lot of different schools of thought. But I do believe in the United States of America, for what it is worth, we should have the right to decide whether we want to do this or not. This is not the era of epidemics. This is not the era of measles, a case of measles wiping out an entire town. We now have other things that can fight these things. You see, we've grown so much. This scenario is like everything else we talk about. Shell, are you back? Do you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can.
We do sort of have epidemics that are being self-created right now. We have super bugs that we can't battle with normal bacteria.
I don't mean those kind of epidemics. I don't mean like MRSA. MRSA was we designed MRSA because of all the other things. I mean the epidemics of the things that you get immunizations for. I mean the measles and the chickenpox and the polio and the diphtheria and the,
One of the books I read about immunization actually talked about the Salk and the Sabin shots. And at the time that these two shots were being developed, I forget which one was first, so I apologize about that, but one was from monkeys, and then the other one was derived from human sources. The one that was derived from monkeys actually instilled a bacteria into the humans. That's why so many people that got the polio vaccination ended up being harmed. People didn't have polio, but they got severe brain damage from this monkey virus that was in those shots. That's why I forget which one of the shots it was such a colossal failure, because it ended up injuring so many of the children. And a lot of people remember that at that time. But I think the Salk shot was first, and then the Sabin came out, or it might have been reversed. But at any rate, this one person who wrote the book said that if you follow the epidemiological reports that were coming out at the time, polio was already on a natural decline. And he says that's what happens when you get these type of epidemics, is that over a generation, we start building antibodies towards whatever that thing is. So the human condition was already starting to wipe polio out. And when these shots came to the marketplace, and he says, well, all of a sudden, as soon as these two shots were presented, there was this enormous spike in the occurrence of polio again, and it almost like brought the disease back. And then with catastrophic counter complications, because it started causing severe brain damage. And then you had people that where their children didn't get polio, but here now they're severely brain damaged for the rest of their lives. So it wasn't scale, but see, none of that's publicized because the pharmaceutical industry doesn't want people connecting the dots and looking at the bigger picture of what happened. Everybody thinks that the Salk and Sabin shots is what saved everybody from polio, and it's not. The disease was on a natural decline before those shots even hit the marketplace. But people were so afraid of their children getting this disease that they just started going out and just getting these immunizations. And to this day, people, the pharmaceutical industry still claims that the polio shot is what destroyed the disease, and it's actually not the truth. And there's been several books written. In fact, there's one called Immunization, where she goes through the whole history of the polio vaccination and what a farce that whole thing was.
Well, I think that it is about not reading the rest of the story with a lot of this stuff. They get snowballed into taking care of something, and they like put blinders on. So we've seen that happen through our history, time and time and time again. We come up with a solution, and the solution becomes the problem.
Look at this. When you talk about, and again,
we have to make it very, very clear. You and I are always trying to be very careful about this, okay? If you believe in immunizations for your children, you absolutely have to follow what makes sense to you. You and I are not advocating that anybody go against what makes sense to them, okay? But if you have a discomfort with it, you should educate yourself so that you make an educated decision and you're not just shooting from the hip and either getting them or not getting them based on, based on fear. But two stories. First of all, I know the woman who started the TAP organization. She's very reasonable. She's done a lot of research. We also know another dear friend of ours who lost her child at 5 years old because of immunizations. He was a healthy child. He got his, I think it was second or third set of titers, and then he developed a rare blood disease, and he ended up not surviving past 5 years old. And she found out during her research that this blood disease is directly related to one of the set of infant titers. And, you know, like I said, for the first year of his life, he was perfectly healthy, and then all of a sudden he got this disease that ended up taking his life when he was 5 years old. And on the reverse side of that, my niece, my great-niece, hasn't had vaccinations now in years. My niece stopped giving them vaccinations, which she gets a lot of flack about from the school, by the way, and they're not supposed to.
Right.
She fills the forms out, and they still give her a hard time. But my niece never gets sick. Now, in her class, the kids, when flu season, the kids are out left and right. She's like the only one that never gets sick in the class, and she's the only one not getting the flu shot. So, you know, if the kids that are getting the flu shot constantly get the flu, and the few that aren't getting it, that says something. You know,
well,
my niece is
wait,
healthier
wait a minute,
than,
wait a minute. Let's remember what we both just said. A shot, an immunization, is a taste of the problem. So it all depends on how healthy you are. That's what I said in the very beginning of the show. If they did everything that they did to baby Alan in the hospital before they hit him with the onslaught of everything that they did, if there was a blood test before you start the shot series on a child, it would be a little bit more appropriate. I still don't think it would be, it would keep every child safe in both directions, but I do think that you'd make a better decision as a parent if somebody took a blood test before you got into the shot series that says, you know, your baby has this going on and that going on, and these are going to, you know, maybe a low white blood count, maybe a low red blood count. Nobody does that. Nobody does that for the first baby visit. They don't. They figure out the blood type of the child when the child is born. They do a quick test on, well, used to be on the bottom of their foot, and and they do a blood type. But they don't do any other kind of blood work to find out if your child is in a good place or in a bad place to get
right.
all of these shots. So that that is one of the major problems, I think. And I
right.
do believe that if you take a child and you know your child and you can actually realize what's going on with your kid, then I think you're probably okay. But like you just said, and I said at the beginning of the show, this is up. This should not be a mandate, is the whole idea. This should be available, just like they don't punish us senior citizens if we don't get a flu shot. Nothing is said to us. Nothing is done to us. But if you want to not get a shot, they're okay with that, you see. They're just okay with it. So I do think that there's some alternatives.
At least with the children, what I started to say before, and I interrupted my own comment, is that a lot of pediatricians' offices now have these signs up that if you do not get your children immunized on a regular basis, look for another pediatrician. And that's unethical.
And I think that's why that Dr. Sears program came out, because there's a lot of pediatricians that are being so pressured by the pharmaceutical companies into thinking that this is the only way. Some of them believe that it really is the only way to protect a child, and some of them are doing it for monetary reasons, which is never the right reason. But the bottom line is that, so she's very upset about this because she likes the pediatrician's office, but they have this big sign in the front of you: do not get immunizations, get yourself a different pediatrician. And that's very hostile, and a lot of them are doing that. So that's why if you are somebody who is concerned and you just want to have a real good sit-down listening to pros and cons, you need to look for what's called a Dr. Sears doctor, okay? And the reason it's called that is Dr. Sears is the doctor who developed this protocol, and it's basically going with the comfort level and belief system of the parents and enabling them to raise as strong a child as they can, you know, based on their belief system without pressuring them. Because it is getting to the point now where parents are being bullied into immunizing their children, even when it may not be an appropriate protocol for them. And parents are being, just like people that are scared into doing chemo that really don't want to do chemo, but they're led to believe there's no other choice. There's a lot of ways to strengthen the immunity of a child without going with the immunizations. And you can, if this is something that doesn't make sense to you and you are concerned about, there's a lot of information out there for you to do research with.
Well, and you better spell Sears, Shell.
Like the store, S-E-A-R-S, Sears.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's for Sears. If you Google it, if you put down Dr. Sears immunization program or immunization protocol, you'll find the website. I've actually found it. And what you do is you put your zip code in, and it gives you a list of pediatricians in your area that have this Dr. Sears protocol. And if you're somebody who doesn't want to get immunizations for your child, there are pediatricians out there that will not force that issue with you. They'll respect your belief system, and they'll speak to you without trying to hammer into you. They'll tell you the pros and cons of doing it or not doing it.
Well, and I think that is those are some of the best words of wisdom that we can give to anybody. And Monica, I didn't know it was going to ring on the phone, so hang on a sec.
Hello?
So she texted me or messaged me on Facebook, so I'm seeing if I can get through to her this way.
Hello?
We made it through, huh?
Yes, it worked.
All right, and Shell, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right, so this is good. Okay, so we know that we can do this now. So from now on, you let me know, message me on Wednesdays if you can't get through, and I'll just call you from the dashboard.
Cool.
So I'm sure you have some input, because one of the reasons I decided to do this show is there's been a lot of controversy posted by Lindsay and Monica in regard to immunization. So you want to tell us your side of the story, Monica?
Basically, all the research that I've been doing, there's a whole group of people out there, a lot of people, a lot of mothers, dads, who are not immunizing their babies at all. Now, there's, of course, a lot of controversy about that, but the science concerning that says that what's the big deal? What's the problem? These children are not going to catch any of these diseases that they're being immunized for, but the immunization, the actual vaccine, is poisoning a whole population of people with all the toxins that are in the vaccine. Now, for years and years and years, they used mercury as a preservative. Then they changed to thimerosal, which is a mercury derivative. Okay, but I've read that supposedly they have taken that out also. But there are still other things in the vaccine that are very dangerous, and it's causing all kinds of health issues for babies, even way down the line, as far as later on in life, scientists are saying. There's aluminum in these vaccines, aborted fetal tissue. Let's see, I'm trying to pull up what else is in them that's really crazy, things that I didn't know about before. But aluminum, we know, is being warned against for Alzheimer's, all kinds of issues. And I know it's just a baby. They're not going to get Alzheimer's. But what they do get is asthma. I mean, look at children nowadays. They have asthma. They have massive ear infections all the time. These things didn't happen before vaccines. But yet, I'm on the fence. I don't know that vaccines aren't totally needed. But I know that a baby, neonate, just born, does not need a hepatitis vaccine. Their immune system cannot handle it. I don't think that babies should be given any vaccines at all until at least 2 years old, till their immune system builds up. And that's the way a lot of other countries are doing it.
Well, and I pretty much agree with everything you said, and like Shelley and I have both said during the show so far this morning, is we're not taking over the advocacy of one way or another. But we do think that people need to be aware, and we both have different feelings about which is right and which is wrong. And now, of course, there's three points of view, which is what I like on the show. If we always totally agree with each other, then it's not much fun. But your reasons are different from mine. My reasons are like what I just said. If you have a baby, a small child, and they're born with issues, unless the issues are manifested and there's a fever or there's effects, nobody ever checks to see.
Right.
To my knowledge, and if I'm wrong and somebody knows better than this, call me and tell me. I'm okay with that. But to my knowledge, there is no actual blood test taken. A series of things checked like we do, like a panel, like we do for somebody else as an adult when they go into for a physical or for a checkup. We just start bombarding babies because a protocol has been set up so many years ago. It's another one of those things that are kind of antiquated, kind of one of those things that isn't really needed anymore. Unless the situation, you know, shows a necessity, then that's different. That's different. But we should.
Well,
be
you know,
able
what,
to...
one of the reasons that immunization is so prevalent is partially brainwashing, and I'll explain what I mean by that. There's two books that I was talking about that I think are very beneficial for people to read. One of them is called Confessions of a Medical Heretic. It's written by Robert S. Mendelsohn, who is a medical doctor. I mean, he's deceased now. This book is probably 30 or 40 years old, and he also wrote a series of books for children called How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician or in Spite of Your Doctor, something like that, the same author. But it's Robert S. Mendelsohn. He is, in fact, a medical doctor, and being inside the inner workings of the medical industry, he didn't like what he saw. He happened to be a brilliant doctor, but he felt that doctors interfere too much with the body's natural ability to heal itself. So he was very, very insightful as far as medical doctors go. So he railed against a lot of the medical protocols that he felt were going beyond what medicine was all about. Another book is called Immunization, The Reality Behind the Myth by Waylon James. Ironically enough, there's actually a foreword by Robert Mendelsohn in this book. He actually endorses it. There's another medical doctor, Richard Moskowitz, MD, says Ms. James is clearly knowledgeable and makes her case against the philosophy and practice and the politics of vaccination in the most thorough, instructive, and sometimes eloquent fashion. It's a big book. She's done a ton of research in here. This book dates back to 1995. She talks about the Salk and Sabin issues in here and stuff. So it's called Immunization, the Reality Behind the Myth. And one of the ways to show the brainwashing in here is I've read a lot of books by Edmund Bordozeke. The books are really kind of obscure. They're hard to get. There's a place in Canada that actually sells books by Edmund Bordozeke called the International Biogenic Society, and they're really the only places you can get them. But at any rate, this book is called My Adventures on Five Continents, My Unusual Adventures on Five Continents. And he was a very learned man. He spoke like five ancient languages. He was a brilliant man. He was an archaeologist. He used to travel the world doing research. And he studied the Essene way, which is very similar to what Hippocrates teaches as far as healing the body, doing it with cleansing, doing it with cleaning up the diet, doing it with getting control of your emotions, things like that. And he studied the ancient Essenes and how they used to heal people. And this is from a non-religious standpoint I'm talking about. So anyway, his books were fascinating. And one of the adventures that he talked about in this book was where he went into the – he was sent with two other scientists to this island where there was an outbreak of a virus that was killing everybody. And what the country was afraid of is that if this virus made it into the populated towns, tourists would be bringing it back to other countries because it was a high tourist area when you got away from the locals. So he and two scientists were sent there to create a vaccination to battle this virus. Well, Edmund took a third of the native people and went to a different area of the island, and because he doesn't believe in vaccinations. He had no intention of creating a vaccination. He did not lose one individual. With his practices of colon cleansing, lightening up the diet, juicing, all these things, you know, and he talked about his practices, having them meditate and all this, everybody recovered. On the other side of the island where the two scientists were, they lost over 60% of the people on that side of the island. One of the scientists had already gotten the virus and succumbed to it. Edmund now, this is 2 weeks later, he goes to that side of the island to see what's happening with the scientists, finds out one of them perished, tells the other scientist, look, everybody, in 2 weeks, I haven't lost one person. I'm still fine. Let me get you and the rest of the native people over here healthy. And the scientist said, no, I have to find a vaccination to protect the mainland. He goes, no, you don't. Nobody on my side of the island has died. This scientist was so brainwashed that a vaccination was the only way to protect the human condition that even though he had that evidence on the other side of the island, not one person died. And meanwhile, on his side of the island, hundreds of more people died, including the other scientist, and he would not relinquish his studies. And he ended up passing away another week later. And then Edmund then took the rest of the people on that side of the island and got the rest of them healthy. When he was returned to the mainland, he had to go up in front of an Inquisition board. It's like, how come you're the only one still alive? What happened? You know, and they never honored him for what he did. What they said is that it was basically a failure because they didn't develop a vaccination. Instead of saying we found a way to heal these people and publishing what Edmund did, he actually
Shelley, what year was that? What year was that?
That had to have been around the 1940s, I guess, 40s or 50s.
Uh-huh. And that's when, of course, immunizations, there was such an onslaught of making sure that everybody got immunizations. And then, of course,
That was the whole mindset then.
Yeah. And in the years to come, I think that we've seen many transitions in regard to immunizations. We also have seen the onslaught of a lot of third world countries coming to the United States and seeing things like measles come back and scarlet fever and diphtheria and whooping cough and all the kind of things that years ago were wiping out families, and they came back. So then there was a new push
because of those things to get the immunizations again. There was a real push to open up all the health departments and make sure that minorities or poverty-stricken people were able to go in someplace and get all these immunizations. So there is the intent to do what's right. The problem is, though, once they make a decision, they don't keep questioning, you know, is this working? Is that working? There seems to be, it's just like when we set a law. Remember the day we did the show about the legal system and we talked about the precedents? If you have a lawyer who's really, really smart and he's fighting a case, he can go back to a case that happened in the 20s that set mm-hmm. precedent in Podunk, wherever, for a case. And if he can show that a judge said okay to this, then he can prove his point in a court of law today, damn near 100 years later. So it's the same with the immunizations. I think there was a time when it was awesome. I think there was a time in our history when it made a big difference. I think now, though, we've surpassed that. We're at another place.
But see, that's what everybody thinks. They think that at some time immunizations helped. And when you read these textbooks that I've read, and remember, they have scientific information. These aren't people's opinions. They're written by scientists. They're written by medical doctors who are behind the scenes and saying, nope, that's not what happened back then. But because of our pharmaceutical industry-driven media today, all right, which is all based on convincing people that the only way they can get healthy is through some sort of medical prescription intervention and that the body can't heal itself, which is absolutely not true, okay, that these past travesties are being hailed as successes. This book actually talks about Pasteur's smallpox scam, all right? Smallpox, measles, these were not driven out by immunizations. That's a fallacy. And when you read these books, just like with the polio, Our constitutions over a generation will drive out certain types of diseases as a natural order of how our immune systems adapt, all right? Immunizations are not the reason why we are today free of certain diseases, and that is also the reason why some of them are coming back, because we keep messing with the natural strength of the immune system of the human being every time we intercede with chemicals, all right, which are pharmaceuticals and things. These do not strengthen the immune system. If anything, they weaken it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That was good, Shelley.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And I don't think we disagree with any of that. I'm just saying that when the times demanded somebody to do something, that was their answer. And I quite frankly know of stories myself where a family would have one child who could get a vaccination. This is a very, very long time ago. But one family could get a vaccination and another child couldn't, and there would be a death in the family. So there has to be some line there. And I don't disagree with everything that you just said. I agree with it. But I also believe in always looking at both sides of a story. So there were some families who saved a whole family if somebody contracted the measles. My grandmother lost one of her oldest children, Abby Marie, to measles, and they vaccinated the rest of the family to save the family because they didn't know Abby Marie had the measles until she passed. After she passed, the measles came out on her skin. Prior to that, her death certificate reads that she died from eating too many pancakes.
What?
So we're talking about a time when things were really different. There was no media. There was a town newspaper. You see, so it was a different time, and I can understand why all these foolish things happened, and I can understand why scientists were really in charge, because they made most of us lay people feel stupid.
And we trusted them because they made us feel stupid. They made us feel like we didn't know what was going on, and that's been the way of the world for forever. So I don't disagree, and I know about the formaldehyde and the different kind of things that are in some of the shots, and that never made sense to me at all. But again, I want to make sure everybody understands that this has gone through a gambit of right and wrong for the whole journey, the whole journey. And there are old people, older than me, people that are in their 90s that will tell you stories about vaccinations saving their whole family. So be that what it may, that's why there's still, a half-hearted, albeit, belief in what happened during those years. And I believe in building your own immune system. You know that I do. I believe in that. I believe in how you take care of your body. That saying that we've said so many times, if you don't take care of your body, where are you going to live, means something to me. It really, really means something to me. Not that I do the best job. I'm also not the best housekeeper, but I try. And that's what I believe in, and that's what I think everybody should understand, and that's what I think everybody should come to grips with. It is about you. It is about what you do for yourself. It is about how you take care of yourself. Hands down, there is no magic elixir. Never has been. But at some point in time, it saved some people's lives, maybe kept families from being wiped out, and kept the farm going. So there's some belief there. But I do think in today's age and all the things that we know now and all the opportunities. These two ladies that are on the show with me right now, everybody, are research specialists in my eyes. They absorb what they read and they go through, and they, when they find something that doesn't seem right to them, they delve in deeper to their research and find other answers. Not all of us can do that. Not all of us have the perseverance to be able to dig deeper until we find the buried treasure. So a lot of times we dig so deep and find a little bit of the treasure and we're happy and we walk away from it. They don't. They're real researchers in my eyes. So the things that they share with you are things that they know for sure. They've read it in several different places, not just one. So you need to make a decision, though, that's based on your own family. But I still think, very simply speaking, that vaccinations are not for every child, because some children can't tolerate a vaccination. And you need to believe that, and you need to understand that. Some children can, and it works for them and keeps them safe, or maybe they were going to be safe anyway. But you need to be able to analyze that, and I feel that our government needs to respect the fact that we should have choices in that. We should always have choices.
The whole thing is, I don't believe that any child is helped by immunizations based on my research and understanding how the immune system builds itself. I just think that there are some children that are not harmed by it. I don't believe that immunizations actually help any child, and I don't believe that immunizations are why any epidemic was ever cleared. And when you read these books, it's very, very clearly laid out the course that these, like smallpox, measles. I had measles and chickenpox both, and that's how that's how I ended up getting the shingles some years ago, because I had chickenpox at one time in my life. But I had taken the shots, so I had the shots. When I was a kid, I was immunized against all this, and I got everything I was immunized against. So how did it protect me?
Well, but that's the whole idea. It's supposed to give it to you a little bit so you can understand the confusion, though, of a parent who has been told that this vaccination is going to give your child's body a taste of this, of the measles. So, you know, they might get a little bit sick. That's what they would tell the parent way back then. She might run a little temperature, not to worry. When you got a booster shot,
I had full-blown measles, and then I had full-blown chickenpox, and supposedly I was immunized against both. My parents were like, well, how the heck did this happen? I was sick. I was really sick. Yeah. And at that time, I already had the heart condition, so it was really dangerous for me to be that sick.
I got both of those, too, including mumps. I took care of a house full of children, not my own, but when I took care of kids, I think I shared this story before on the show, five of the kids that came to my house every day had scarlet fever. And I kept everybody else from getting scarlet fever until, like, I want to say it was a year later, Mike got sick. Mike was, like, about four, and he was on fire. I brought his temperature down in the kitchen sink and some baby aspirin and got him better, and then I looked at his fingers. And all around his fingers, there were little blisters around his cuticle and underneath his fingernails. I took him to the emergency room, Tompkins County Hospital, and I said, my son has scarlet fever. And the lady at the desk said, that's impossible. Nobody gets scarlet fever anymore. And I said, yeah, they do, and that's what's wrong with my son. And the doctor came in. She, you know, boo-hooed me, boo-booed me, whatever you want to say. And the doctor walked in, looked at Mike. They did a blood test, came back, and he said, your kid has scarlet fever. How the hell did he get scarlet fever? I said, I don't know. But streptococci germ, if it's not taken care of, and Mike was the kind of a baby that unless he was so sick that he'd have to stay settled, you didn't know he was sick. He just kept going and kept going and kept going. So the streptococci germ turned into scarlet fever, and one shot that looked like a vanilla milkshake, I will never forget it, in his little butt, part of it even oozed out, it was so thick, he was better within 12 hours. So, you know, it is what it is, and there are some things that you have to depend on and some things that you can't depend on.
Right, but the shot you're talking about was probably gamma globulin or something like that. I don't believe it was an immunization. Because
it was penicillin. It was penicillin.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't an immunization.
At one time
don't
I had
give an immunization after they're sick, no. Mm-mm.
Well, I had, at one point when I was so sick, I had no immune system. What's supposed to fight infection in your blood, I had, like, no readings of, which means I could have gotten a common cold and I would have been dead. So I had to go through a series of what are called gamma globulin shots, which are very painful, by the way. I had to get three of them, and it's this really, really thick serum that they have to put in, you know, through your butt cheek because it's that heavy. But it felt like somebody was driving a stake through my body. It was very pain, and they warned me about that. But that was the only way they could get my IgA levels to come up, which is part of the immune system, which fights infection. I had nothing. I had nothing in my system. And so I remember going through that. But, yeah, when you said that about the thick fluid, it reminded me of that whole thing. You know, but the whole reason I embarked on this journey of research is because after 30 years of going to medical doctors, doing everything they told me to do, taking all the medications, I'd gotten all my, you know, all my vaccinations and everything up to that point, I actually had doctors throwing their hands up and saying, there's nothing else we can do for you. And they told me that I had chronic, irreversible, degenerative diseases. This is how they put it to me. And that all they could offer me is to be comfortable and give me other prescription drugs now just to deal with the pain I was in, but that nothing I had was reversible. And if I had accepted that, which a lot of people do, okay, and gone out on disability, which a lot of people do, I would not be here today. I probably wouldn't even still be alive because I was that near death when I was told that in my late 30s, and now I'm 55. And, you know, I haven't seen a medical doctor in 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, that's a choice, and I'm not much for going to the doctors either, and a lot of people poo-poo that when you say that. I met in my insurance class this week, there was a long conversation about people who need to see a doctor on a regular basis, and that's why you need health insurance, that you should be in with a family doctor no matter how old you are, so that they can keep an eye on everything that's going on with your body. I don't believe in that either. That's bull crap because, first of all, half the time a family doctor today doesn't even know who you are when you walk in the office. So that is what it is. But we're out of time.
But that's the mindset. People believe without medical intervention you can't maintain health, and that's just utter nonsense. I mean, if I break my leg,
I think there's a lot of people. I think there's a lot of people today that see this side of the story. I think there's a lot of people that understand. I think it's nothing like it used to be when the doctor had the golden rule. I don't think that's true anymore. But we got to go. We're down to 36 seconds, and I want to invite Monica tomorrow to be on the show because we're going to do a show called The Meeting of the Minds: Couple Relationships, Friend Relationships, and Coworker Relationships. I think we'll have some fun with that, and maybe we'll get some other callers from people who listen all the time because relationships are important to all of us. But I want to wish everybody a great day. The sun is shining here in Florida. It promises to be a very, very nice day after all that wind and a little bit of storms yesterday. I think we're at the calm side of that today. So everybody go out and have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. God bless. Thanks, girls.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Monica.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Renee.
Yeah, bye-bye.